Welcome to the Ivy Podcast. We're just two aunties sharing our experience through the lens of one Blackfoot woman and one Anishinaabe woman. And we are Indigenous Vision, an educational nonprofit based in Montana and Arizona. We are 100% Indigenous-led, and this is our podcast. Check us out at indigenousvision.org to learn more about our work, make a donation, or play back any of our radio shows and this episode.
Hey, welcome to the Indigenous Vision Podcast. We are officially on episode 114. So glad you made it back and found us once again on your whatever platform you prefer streaming on. My name is Melissa Spence. I am coming to you from the southern lands of the Paiute here in Nevada, aka Las Vegas. I am here with our executive director, Suta Calling Last, who is up in Montana. And we have a very special guest today. Suta, how are you? It's been not that long.
I'm doing good. Well, I'm going to get better. I started off the day with a cold. I woke up with a sore throat. And so I jumped in the sauna. That's why I'm all sweaty and hot looking. And I'm trying to down some lemon, ginger, carrot juice. But the Oscars happened last night and I wanted to decompress. And so I invited a special guest on, Rose Stiffarm, Blackfoot like me, but a very skilled Blackfoot in the field of cinematography. Works mostly as a director of photography on set. And so this whole podcast is about perspective and our vision as different people. And so I really am so flattered and love that you're going to join us because I follow you on Facebook and I really like your commentary about different movies and different things that are happening in film. And so thank you for being here, Rose. I'll let you introduce yourself a little bit better.
Okay. My name's Rose Stiffarm. My mom's mom, my maternal grandma, was Marjorie Steadhorse, and she was Blackfoot. My maternal grandpa was Harvey Jack Paul, and he was from Cowichan and Saanich. And then my dad was from Ani and Nakota in Fort Belknap, Montana. And my mom is Jeanette Stiffarm, and she grew up in Spokane, Washington, in a Catholic orphanage. And so that's due to trauma from her parents growing up in residential school, and they just weren't able to take care of all the kids. So for me, I'm learning a lot as an adult. But something that my dad was very insistent upon from a very young age was to always be a part of the community and to be with our people. And through that community, they've always instilled within me like the importance of being a community member, but also giving back to the community. Something like that has happened of me growing up in Seattle. I was part of a Native Youth Theater program. And through that Native Youth Theater program, I later became involved in a Native Youth Film program. From there, I was like, you know what, I want to go to film school. And so then I ended up going to Capilano University and I took the Indigenous Independent Digital Film program and I got my diploma. And then I took the cinematography for film and video certificate. And then after that, I used those two credentials to ladder into the motion picture arts bachelor degree program. And so that's what I completed in 2016. And so since then, I've been working as a cinematographer and a director of photography and a lot of smaller projects, unfortunately. But I'm really excited to say that there's some bigger projects I have in the works that I still can't really, they're not out there yet and they haven't been announced. And so it's like, I can't really talk about them yet, unfortunately. But I did just finish a project called Wazakone as director of photography. And we got to shoot with an Arri Alexa Mini and rent a really cool Fisher 10 dolly. And so it's going to look really cool when people finally get to see it. And so stand by for that. And then there's a horror film I was working on as a short film as DP, and that's coming out soon. And yeah, I'm just pretty stoked because like seeing Lily Gladstone shout out so many incredible filmmakers and artists like leading up to her going to the Oscars was just so freaking awesome and incredible and powerful to see, and like such grace and like class on her part, just bringing so many people with her. Like, wow.
Well, first of all, I'm like beaming with pride. Like, you've done so much and it's really important. I want everybody listening to know that when Native movies are made, Rose needs to be there behind the camera because that perspective matters. You can't have pretendians pretending to know or the experience or the feelings that they're trying to capture when they're doing these movies about our community. You know, like I always say, if it's about us, it should be by us. And your background and your family's experience is really what we talk about on this podcast, is our cultural identity and then the experience, the Indigenous experience throughout history and what brings us to where we're at. And I always thought like, I need all the Seattle Indians, the Blackfoot people, to form this small group because there's so many of you guys in Seattle. And I joked with Melissa that I went to this training in Seattle and I like, somebody was like, oh, there's a Blackfoot, there's Blackfeet people that work here. And I'm like, oh, really? And I didn't even like finish talking with them. And I just yelled out the hallway. I'm like, okay. And somebody poked their head out. And I was like, oh, yep. Cause you know how we are. So, but it was fun. And yeah, Lily's family, a lot of her cousins there are in Seattle area, Washington. And yeah, we have a whole small tribal community of city Indians. And some of them have relocated there to get educations and work. And others were like relocated in the relocation and assimilation era. So it's really, really interesting history that all of us natives come from, because I was born on the res and then grew up on the res, and Melissa is a city girl.
Born and raised Winnipeg. So I'm actually I'm enrolled in Lake Manitoba First Nation. So I'm like second cousins with Adam Beach, who did very well in the 90s and the early 2000s. And I got to befriend a lot of people in film in Winnipeg because it was such a hub for Indigenous arts. You know, like I became a radio DJ in my 20s and I went on to do a bunch of stuff. And over the years, though, I'm going to have to say I have really become, I don't know, turned off by the whole celebrity culture of just Hollywood in general, especially these days. And I worry about Indigenous people going into that field and some of the things that they're going to have to put up with to get ahead, because there's some things that I had to do in radio to get ahead, like not say anything about certain racist things. But I think things are really shifting now. And I wanted to ask you, Rose, what's it been like navigating this type of culture of a industry as an Indigenous woman? Have you run into anything that's really, really, really bad, like bad medicine vibes anywhere?
I have experienced some things that have made me wonder, do I want to stay in this industry? And I constantly am asking myself, is this something that I want to keep doing? And then I'm kind of left with different experiences in my life where I'm like, I have to keep going. It's not just about me. It's not just about my people. It's about the future generations to come. And do I want them to have to keep dealing with this bullshit? And so I persist despite all of that, and which is, you know, unfortunate. But like, I remember one time, and like, let me say, I'm currently non-union. I've considered joining the union, but there's still a lot of barriers that make it accessible to a lot of diverse people, unfortunately, not just Indigenous people, but other diverse people that could join, people from lower classes, different backgrounds. There's a lot of different barriers that exist there. And so I'm currently non-union. And so there have been times where I have come out to like be an assistant as a day call or like for like a week or something. And so then I'm with like a group of people who, it's mostly white men. Maybe there's a white woman there. Maybe there's a man of color, but predominantly it's like mostly the camera team is like 8 or 9 people, because it's usually 2 cameras, like a DOP, 2 cam ops, 2 first, 2 seconds, and then a trainee, and then a DIT. Like that's 8 or 9 people. Usually several of those people are all white. And then there I am there more often than not as the camera trainee, which is mostly you're there to fill up water bottles and grab coffees, and oh, I forgot my hat on the truck, can you go grab that? Oh, you're going to the truck, can you grab my sunglasses? Oh, you're going to the truck, can you grab my sweater? Like, it's just, that's the job. And like, I don't enjoy that job. I mean, like, they're like, oh, you can learn. And like, their whole thing about like having people be a trainee is so that they can pay them minimum wage, when like the DP is making like, I'm not even sure how much, because it's like I haven't done camera union work as a DOP, but I know it's a lot more money than the rest of the team is. But especially so, like the whole team is making significantly more than the camera trainee. The whole point of that is to whittle out the weak ones or whatever, or however they phrase it, or, you know. And so that for me gets frustrating, because it's like there have been days where I've worked on certain TV shows where the day was 17 hours long, and maybe I hadn't gone through the camera training program, but I have received formal camera training. But I was asking the camera, the second AC, like, what can I do to help get us out of here quicker? And then he's just yelling at me, screaming at me, telling me to use my head. And I'm just like, can you just please tell me what to do so we can all go home? Because I want to do that. And then I had to say that like 3 or 4 times, and he just was getting so frustrated at me, and he wouldn't stop screaming. And it's just like, you really have to ask yourself, is this where I want to be? And so when I am in those higher level assistant roles, when I am in an operator, when I am a cinematographer, I make a point to not treat my assistants like that. I try and make it a really, but it's also kind of like essentially what it feels like when, like, this is how leadership has been made and as an example to you. What it kind of starts to feel like is when, like, you know, hypothetically, say you're coming from a traumatic household as a childhood and then trying to be the parent passing on these new ways of doing things that haven't been example to you before. So it's kind of in that moment. And I, like, honestly, I have come from an abusive childhood home where I haven't had the healthiest parenting displayed for me, but also I currently don't have a partner or kids, but it's something that I've been trying to be really mindful and intentional on, to like think about how can I be a healthy person so that I can be creating healthy spaces for that when I'm ready for it. And so, but as a cinematographer, it's something like, if I haven't had healthy leadership presented to me, it's very hard in the moment to be really thinking like, how can I be sharing and passing on this knowledge and creating opportunities and not scream at someone? So it is challenging, but I really try and do my best. But it's been a lot of like inner healing and like just really being mindful. And sometimes it's just as simple as taking a moment to take a quick breath in. And then I think that a lot of the students that I've been able to work with over the years, something they have always commented on is how patient I have been as an instructor, how patient I am as a cinematographer and director of photography. If I'm working with a director who maybe they don't have formal training as a director, there's sometimes directors of photography who will try and like belittle or be condescending to them. And for me, I'm like, I don't care. Like, part of what my work is as a DOP is creating equity and creating more diverse and working with people who are more diverse. And so what that is also going to entail is I'm going to have to be training a lot of the people that I'm working with, which, you know, is why I ask for such a significant daily rate, is because if I'm going to be doing work like that and training people, it's the task at hand of creating a project, but it's also the task at hand of creating a network of filmmakers and technicians who can do phenomenal things, but also are learning different ways of doing it. And like something I really appreciate about having gone to the Indigenous Film Program at CAP is that kind of like how they taught us initially was like when you first are going into a community to work with them, you don't go in with a recorder right away. You go in and you introduce yourself and then you go back and you make another trip and then you bring a sound recorder and say, we can use this, we don't have to, but it's here if you want it. And then later you come back again and say, you know what, I brought a camera with me here today. We can use it, we don't have to, but it's here if you want to. And so just the fact of like coming in with just an introduction, that's a big thing, and not expecting anything. I think sometimes people, they just come into communities and they're just so willing to extract, and it's just not an Indigenous way of being. I find that most often when I'm working on Native projects, it's like they'll make offerings to the community. They'll ask permission. Can we be here? When I worked on the Cowichan Sweater documentary, it's on CBC. Anyone can watch it on Gem online. But they have, or I think it's in Canada, you can watch it online. I don't know where you can watch it in the States yet. But when I was working on it, all of the crew was Indigenous and most of us were from Cowichan, which is a huge thing because there's so many Cowichan Sweater documentaries out there already, but how many of them have been actually made by Cowichan people? And not just like, oh, we hired a consultant, but no, we it's a writer, it's a director, it's a producer, it's multiple producers, it's, you know, it's the camera person and like so many different people involved. But like something that we did as a crew is we made a community event before our first day of shooting, and we wanted to celebrate Cowichan people and knitting, but also part of it was we made a point to get the community there to say, this is the story that we want to tell, this is who we are, do we have permission? We're calling an elder forward, this whole community recognizes this elder, do we have permission? And the elder said, yes, you have my permission. And so because we did that, if we were filming in the community over those next couple weeks, people, you know, would let us do the work. And they knew that it was okay. amongst the whole community. And that if they had an issue, they could bring it to that elder and say, you know what, this is my concern. And I think that's just a different way of doing things. And that's something I haven't seen in other productions where we're not really the key creatives.
No, I think you're talking about doing things with love, and that's so cool. And relationship making. I know nobody can tell, but Rose has never gone to a cultural humility training. I imagine you just became this awesome through your hardcore lived experience. But what you're saying is so true. And I don't think a lot of people understand that you get a better end result, you get a better product when people are fully involved, transparent, and appreciated and acknowledged. It's like cooking, right? Like, if you run a kitchen where the head chef is like yelling at all the sous chefs, then all of those vegetables are going to be chopped and under extreme stress and duress. And same as hunting, like if you're a good hunter, you're not going to make your hunt run very far and build up all those stress hormones, because what you're producing at the end will carry all that energy that was made to put it together. I really believe in the energy that you put into something determining the end result. And so that brings me to like what brought Rose on today is that her early like groggy morning post. It's like, I think it was like 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning, maybe both of us were up at a really weird hour. He posted, so what's the deal with Jennifer Lawrence? And I went back because I didn't get to, I streamed part of it before my son's bedtime, and then I had to put him to bed, and I woke up and sad that Lily didn't win Best Actress category. But I liked Emma Stone say, like, I hope we get to work together more into the future. Then I looked more into Jennifer Lawrence and how they announced the nominees. I guess I had never seen her look so deadpan and not involved, because like when I see her on late night shows, she's usually very quirky and makes jokes and flows really well, and in her movies as well. And this one seemed a little weird because you could tell she's reading from a teleprompter and there's no emotion and it's very deadpan. And it's not authentic, but I'm really glad like whoever picked her for saying those words, because we do have an ugly history on this continent of making relationships between Native people, Indigenous people, and settlers. And so I think it's okay to acknowledge, but given my career and what I do, I'm comfortable in uncomfortable conversations. And because I'm the person sitting in the seat of Indigenous genocide and a survival of that, I'm not uncomfortable speaking about it. I think it takes a lot of strength to say, hey, my community has gone through this, and we need to have this trauma-informed, which is what you're talking about, Rose, is like trauma-informed approach to working with people who have been through some crazy and chaotic things. Melissa, did you ever hear of the Jennifer Lawrence thing? I was wondering the other day, like, why don't people like her? And I don't know how I missed this one, because it's right in our alley of cultural identity and kind of like film and entertainment and music and significant sites. And she was doing a movie in Hawaii, and she sat on a sacred rock formation. And she just ended up mocking, even to the apology point, she ended up mocking the Hawaiian Indigenous community's belief of why those rocks were sacred, laughing at that. And then I think she like used it in a funny way, because she was like, she didn't have to, but she was like, oh, I was itching my butt. And I'm like, if you really think, who itches their butt like that? Like a donkey or a horse or, you know, like no human really itches their butt or even really talks about it like that, unless you have like an extreme girl problem going on.
Gross.
even at that point, like it's completely unnecessary to be moving your hiney on any rock or park bench or anything like that. Weird. I don't know what to think about that. It just, after I revisited all of that, and that happened in 2016, and it hit me, I was like, wow, that's such a it's such a horrible thing to do as a film production. Like, I think when you're in film and you're going someplace to work that's somebody else's home, you're responsible for those people. And I don't know if she really loosened up a rock and if it rolled down the hill and almost killed the sound guy, but that's a violation of NAGPRA or something, because it's a sacred site.
That's the first I'm hearing of it, but I'm not surprised, because in the past, we'll say 4 months, a lot of celebrities have been really disappointing me in general, learning about their deep-rooted colonialism, their deep-rooted just disrespect in general for Indigenous bodies and lives.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm really grateful and hopeful when I see Lily Gladstone, when I see, or just now hearing Rose, indigenizing the industry slowly. So maybe the tides will turn, or are turning, in fact, even right now at this moment, because we have so many of our wonderful people bringing their uniqueness to the industry to shift it, hopefully. That's my beacon of light, is seeing people like Lily and all the people in Winnipeg who've been trying so hard to be a part of this industry. And now hearing, having Rose on the show is really amazing, to see a strong woman also, not just, you know, in front of the camera, but behind and doing all the really important work. Thank you, Rose.
Oh, thank you. Like, a lot of the work I do, I try to be humble and not really talk about it, but like, just when people acknowledge it though, I'm always like over the moon. So I'm just like, thank you. But, like, it is inspiring, and it is so hopeful to see Lily like being different. It's a breath of fresh air. It's honestly truly inspiring. It's just so incredible. Like, there have been people wondering, when did you meet Lily? Because like I've been sharing on Facebook that, and also maybe this is something for y'all to hear, but there's a fake Facebook account of Lily's on out there, and like Lily has been asking people to like report it and block it if they see it. And so she only has an Instagram presence, and so people have been like looking at it like, oh, it looks legit, and I'm like, no, it's not legit, can confirm, I'm her friend, like she asked people to do this, like please listen, please. And people are like, wait, she's your friend, like how did you meet her, when did that happen? I had a few people asking me like, when did you meet Lily? And I was like, and like in my personal like day-to-day life, and I'm like, you know what, I'm just gonna make a Facebook post, because the more Lily Gladstone is like on our timelines and in our social feeds, the better it is for her to book more roles, let's be real, like because people know that she's talking about her and are watching her. And so it's like, I know that if Lily Gladstone is in a movie, I want to go see it. I know that, and I know I'm not the only one. And so part of it is also, I just wanted to express, like, she is such a real down-to-earth person, and I have so much love and admiration for her, even more so because when I met her, it was on the set of Winter in the Blood, and that was around 2010, and so that was in Montana, and so I was working on it. That was my first feature. I was just an intern, and Lily was on it, and she was an actor in it, and so what kind of, like, made her stand out to me on that project was like, I had just gone through like set production training, like PA training, and they were telling us that we shouldn't be talking with or engaging with the actors and like that kind of thing. Don't distract them. Like, oh, don't ask them for their autograph, like those kinds of things. And then next thing you know, like I'm just there minding my business at Circus. And then Lily comes up to me and she's like, oh, hi, I just wanted to introduce myself, I'm Lily Gladstone. And she tells me she recognized me from a few years prior. And I was like, what? She's like, yeah, I've seen you before. I was like, what? Where? And I was so confused. And she was saying, oh, I think you used to act in Red Eagle Soaring Native Youth Theater in Seattle, right? I used to come and see you act. She said she used to be in that program. Because I was like, what? You used to come to Red Eagle Soaring, like, performances, like, back in the day and see me act? What? What? And I was like, nah. She was like, no, really. And so she's like, I just wanted to introduce myself to all the, because there was like 8 or 9 interns on the set, and everyone's just, you know, glossing over us like, oh, they're just a PA. Like, oh, I don't need to say hi to them. But then meanwhile, there's Lily like saying, you know what? I see you as a Native person, and here you are in this space. I see you and I respect you. And so for me, that said so much as a person who is like, just getting into film, for an actor to do that, I was like, wow, this is big. But it's something that has always sat with me of like, oh, she's a real one. And so like in 2022, like more recently, I was doing some filming in Seattle, and it was for a project that Lily was being featured in, and that's on PBS. It's like a 15-minute short film, like an episode talking about her like blossoming career and how she's a star to watch. And so but we were filming in Seattle and I was having a car problem, and I didn't know how to check my oil. And then she was like, oh, here's how to check your oil. And she's showing me how to do it. And then she's like, I think you need more oil. You know what? I was like, oh, you know, we're living that ghetto fabulous lifestyle of waiting for a payment. And she's like, that's okay, I'll buy you some oil. So she bought me 2 quarts of oil. And I'm like, that is Lily, you know? And then after that, we went for pho. She treated me for pho. And so it's just, she's such a down-to-earth human being and such a real person, but also like so much love and admiration to her, you know?
Totally. I've been watching her interviews on everything, every interview she has and everywhere she's featured. I try to like it for the same reason, so that it supports her. Every single like, love, and share matters when that's your career. So I try to do as much as I can. But in all of the interviews she's had, she's really, I think she even makes the other actresses more down to earth and relatable. Even there was one interview, I can't remember what it's called, but there Emma Stone was also on it, and I think it was for the Golden Globes maybe. She just made everybody really comfortable and made the conversation really down to earth in what you're saying. And usually it's very superficial conversation about the films that I'm seeing, and I don't know if I'm biased because she's Blackfeet also, so I don't know. But I think it's really important when we get behind the camera and when we get behind this sound, that it's us. And so there's so many projects going on out there, and I think that the storylines are opening up to where more people are interested in hearing from us instead of about us. And so I'm looking forward to what these next few years do for, I mean, I feel like just in this 1 year, me and Melissa talk about it all the time with these last 2 years since Reservation Dogs have come out, and then all of the other Predator, all of these other films are so just amazing.
Right.
Yeah, I can't imagine what it's going to be like 5 years from now, because there's so much cool stuff in just these last couple of years. Like, I didn't imagine 5 years ago.
I remember when Rutherford Falls came out, I could not stop talking about it. And it's like, Sierra is one of my friends. Like, I met her years ago through that film program I was involved in Seattle. But like, through being involved with that, I've just been able to like know she's an incredible writer to watch for. And so as soon as Rutherford Falls was coming out, I was already spamming people's posts about it, and people are like, it hasn't even come out, how do you know it's good, Rose? And I'm like, because I know her writing is good. I don't need to know exactly what it is, but I know that she has consistently delivered excellent and phenomenal, hilarious writing over the years. I just know I'm gonna watch it when it comes out. And so there's certain people's names, like anything with Lily Gladstone on it now, like I don't need to know exactly what it is. I know I want to watch it though. Like anything with Sierra Teller or Nalis, I don't know exactly what it is, but I know I want to watch it now. Part of being in film school is, from having graduated from it, is like, it's kind of essentially ruined watching a lot of stuff in a way, because I can really pick up on like visual cues a lot more so. And so when I go into watching a show now, I don't like to read a review about it or hear what it's about or watch the trailer. I'd rather just go in blind, and that's a better experience. It still gets spoiled in certain ways because of the cues I can pick up on, but that's how I prefer to go into things, knowing as little as possible, because then that way I can really gauge a genuine response instead of just like a in response, if that makes sense. And so Rutherford Falls, I think she's working on a project called Bonnie now. That's something I'm like telling people to keep an eye out for, because that's with Janice Schmieding and Sierra Teller Ornelas. And I've really been loving seeing Janice Schmieding out there too, because her character in Rutherford Falls, it's like, I say this as a fat woman, I appreciated seeing her on screen because she was the leading lady, and her whole storyline, spoiler, sorry, is like talking about building a community center for her people. And that's the thing that's driving her own story forward. And then, like, it's not all about a guy. It's about, but what I do appreciate, though, is that, you know, the guy does come, but it's just she's minding her own business, doing her thing. It's not she's actively seeking, how do I better myself so that I can attract some guy? She's just minding her own, like, doing the work that she wants to do for her people and her community. And then that just kind of just so happens. And so it's just like, that's refreshing to see on screen too.
It was so refreshing. It was. I want a culture center so bad. Montana needs a native run culture center so bad. And I thought I was the same year that Rutherford Falls came out. I was like, oh my goodness, I found her. And they somehow coincidentally built a museum of arts and culture here in Missoula. And I was like, oh, maybe I could put my office there, because I wanted the whole building and exhibits curated by us. And I just thought it would have been so fun, but I was letting some time simmer down before I get into it again, because that movie came out and we were talking about the same thing. I let some time calm down between me saying I want my culture center. But that's so amazing. I feel the same way.
Yeah, me too.
And there's one more thing that I saw a meme this morning, and I wanted to hear what you two think about it. And it said, well, shout out to Martin Scorsese, Leonardo DiCaprio for standing by the Native community, and Robert De Niro for standing by the Native community, because they were nominated in 10 categories, but Killers of the Flower Moon didn't win one of them. And that stunned me a little bit, because I feel like I'm not even in film, but I have a couple of friends that are film buffs. You're the one who's professionally in film on my Facebook friends, Rose. And so that's how I invited you on here, because I don't have the expertise besides being a fan of some of these movies. But it just stunned me that those three men, when they're in an Oscar nomination, they get it. I just feel like, have you ever known those three men to be nominated, but never receiving one?
I know Leonardo DiCaprio just got his like a few years ago, despite like a 2-decade career. But I'm someone who is just not a fan of awards, but I appreciate the sentiment. And like, I do see how it represents and lifts up our community to just to see us in the arena of that space. Right. But mm-hmm. I'm just not a fan. And I just was not surprised. I actually didn't watch the Oscars. I stopped watching them a few years ago, but like, I really was deep down hoping that Lily would win. I was like, this could be it. This could finally be it. And then when I checked my phone after a couple hours, and I was like, oh, surprise, it didn't happen. But, you know, I'm still here celebrating, because in the past few years, I have never seen my body type on like major productions as I have been seeing for the past few years. And that's a really monumental thing for me. I mean, for years, Indigenous people have been represented so skewed, right, in film, and we get sexualized, and it's always like a really, really pretty, like Pocahontas-ish kind of woman. But to see how everything is changing now, and are getting represented in so many different ways, like Killers of the Flower Moon, I was just blown away by how many amazing Indigenous women were lined up in that film. And I just felt a sense of pride to see someone who looked like me actually on a major motion picture. And I just wanted to celebrate that, at least in the very minimal, you know, celebration aspect of what's going on right now. But to wrap things up, I just wanted to say, Rose, what advice would you give anybody who's being inspired by all of this right now? What advice would you give someone to tell them, how do I proceed? How do I become a part of this amazing, quote unquote, indigenizing the film industry?
For me, I think the thing that got me into wanting to do film is because people have presented incredible opportunities to me. And I've always been like, oh, wow, that sounds cool. I'm going to go do that. And someone asked me a while ago, like, are you doing what you thought you would be doing when you were a kid, Rose? And I'm like, you know what? This ghetto ass, like poor ass kid from South End of Seattle, honestly never had a dream. And that's tragic right there in itself. But I got to say, I remember, like, I never told anyone that I wanted to be a cinematographer. That was like, not until like I was in my 20s did I even know what the heck a cinematographer was. But like, when I really think about it, I remember being a kid in the 90s and early 2000s and watching movies and seeing back in the day when we had the DVDs with the behind the scenes and all the like director's commentary and everything and actor's commentary. Like I remember watching that and seeing a person on the end of this long ass thing with a camera. And I was like, I remember thinking that looked pretty cool, but I never thought I would do that. Honestly, never. But because I was part of that youth theater program and later became involved in that youth film program, I had mentors who seen something in me. I don't know what, but they seen something, a potential opportunity of something. But for me, I've had so many incredible teachers to thank over the years that all I can say is that if you want to get into film, consider film school, but know that it's not the end all be all. Because I also encountered, not so much in my case, I've been blessed and very grateful to have so many incredible teachers and mentors, but I have heard from other people that they have had very discouraging teachers who have said, oh, this isn't for you, like you should just go try and go do something else. And all I gotta say is don't listen to them. If that's who your teacher is, go find a different one, go find a better one, find one that will encourage you. And know that not it like part of us diversifying and decolonizing includes recognizing that our teachers aren't only in colonial institutions. I have learned so much from people who've never attended university or even gotten their high school diploma or whatever, but they have so much lived experience, so much practical experience, such wisdom and perspective from all these different places outside of these colonial institutions, that is what's going to give you the strength and the fortitude to persist in these spaces where we've never been designed to be there, but we're going to break down the doors anyways and get in there. And that's what I so appreciate about Lily is she said, you know what, I'm here, but it's not just me who's here. It's me and all these people who are here. And like those scenes in Reservation Dogs, they're having that moment of saying, you know what, like you think you're here, and you're alone in this moment. It's not just you. There's all of our ancestors there with us too, encouraging us, uplifting us, and supporting us. And then it's reminding yourself that it's not the work that Lily's doing isn't just for Lily. From where I'm standing, I can see that it's for herself, yes, but it's also for our people and our future generations. I seen something on Facebook this morning that, you know what, I was like, this is a win. It's still a win. Because somebody posted a picture and it was this young Native woman, this young girl looking at the screen and seeing Lily on the screen. That's the win right there. There's still a lot of work to do. I still have a lot of hope because of that. Because I didn't see that when I was on screen when I was a kid.
You've been listening to the Indigenous Vision Podcast, or the IV Podcast, episode 114. A big shout out to Rose Stiffarm for joining us on this very special episode to celebrate indigenizing the film industry. If you'd like to follow us on our socials, check us out on Instagram, Indigenous Vision Media. We're also on Facebook under Indigenous Vision, and of course, our website where you can learn more about who we are, what we do, and some of the projects we have coming up, including our cultural humility training this May 7th, indigenousvision.org. We'll be back soon. Make sure you like, share, represent, and hold it down for your community. This has been the Ivy Podcast.